Forward by A.S. Byatt. I remember buying my first Pratchett, it was Men-at-Arms, in a bookshop in Sloane Square. I badly needed to be psychologically elsewhere, and the bright heap of Discworld novels looked like a possible retreat. I turned them over. At first glance, Josh Kirby's covers with pink and bosomy cartoon women, as well as energetic dragons, did not seem to be my kind of thing. I think what persuaded me was the word Ankh-Morpork. Anyone who could think that up was a real writer. And a Discworld had been part of my childhood. There was an illustration in the book of Norse myths I had of an Indian myth of a world balanced on four elephants on a giant turtle surrounded by a snake. I took the book home, read it without stopping, and was hooked. I bought all the books and read them in order. Every summer, whilst thinking out my writing, I read them again. There is always a joke I hadn't quite got. There is always the quite extraordinary narrative pull of a great storyteller. Later I came to appreciate Josh Kirby's art, too. His creatures have a gleeful wild energy and intricacy, both brash and sophisticated, which is exactly right for these tales. Terry Pratchett says his readers are people who work with computers, but my literary friends are often addicted as I am. I once had a very polite tug of war over a new book, I think it was Thief of Time, with my scholarly and brilliant editor in a bookshop where I was giving a reading. Last week, I had a good talk with a philosopher at a high table about imaginary worlds in general and Pratchett in particular. Also, people who don't read, read Pratchett. Boys of 12 who hate books. I hope he's never taught in schools. His biography on the back of the books used once to claim that some people had accused him of literature. And of course, he is literature, but best enjoyed in solitude and retreat. J.R.R. Tolkien used the term secondary worlds to describe fictive, inventive worlds with their own creatures, geography, history, people. Human beings have always needed the existence of the other, the unreal, imaginary people and things that are other than ourselves, from fairy tales to myths to urban legends. A maker of secondary worlds needs great resources of inventiveness, both on the large scale and in the fine detail. Pratchett's world is wonderful because he has the sheer energy of the great storyteller. You think you know all it is possible to know about a dragon, or a policeman, or a plot, or a landscape, and he tells you more, a lot more than you had any right to expect. And this is exhilarating. From book to book, he gets better, and his world gets more intricate. He gets more and more attached to his own characters, who become more complicated. Consider the way in which Captain Vimes grows from being a drunk in charge of a dysfunctional night watch to a commander who can arrest two armies for a breach of the peace. He finds it hard to go on disliking characters. He can invent irritating minor forms of life, an imp that operates a gooseberry, or disorganizer, belonging to Vimes, which is redeemed by the discovery that it can do the office accounts. An accountant called A.E. Pessimal, sent to inspect the watchman, who turns out to be a hero. Wikipedia constantly illuminates Pratchett. I didn't know that the word pessimal means bad to a maximal extent, or most wanting in quality or value. But he can do real evil, too. Take Mr. Pin, the villain in The Truth, or the chief quisitor, Vorbis, in Small Gods. Both with the ferocious single-mindedness, true cruelty, and narrow vision, which can't change. As Tolkien says, secondary worlds must be coherent. There is a risk of the creator being romantic or being seen to have designs, didactic or sentimental, on the reader. I reread Tolkien for the landscape and the persistent sense of danger. I have problems with stories of real children who find themselves in secondary worlds, rather as though their reading had engulfed them. J.K. Rowling is a brilliant inventor of details of magic, but her world has its origin in a boarding school, a place to which I do not want to return. I never enjoyed C.S. Lewis because I felt he was morally manipulating me as well as his characters. Philip Pullman writes beautifully and dramatically, but he is writing against Lewis, and again runs the risk of becoming didactic and controlling. Pratchett, despite the slapstick, the terrible jokes, and the very clever, complicated jokes, is somehow wise and grown up. As a reader, I trust him. I was once asked by a television interviewer, "Isn't all this simply really about us?" And I indignantly replied, "No, because I needed my secondary world to be other, separate and coherent." But he is, of course, writing about us. He is good at policemen, businessmen, fraudsters, murderers, banks and shares, and at music with rocks in it besides, as well as at goblins, witches, dragons, trolls and dwarfs, and, of course, computers. But he writes neither satire nor allegory. What gets into his world is in his world, with its own energy and logic. The shorter stories collected in A Blink of the Screen often consist of incursions from the secondary world into our world. A fantasy writer kills off his barbarian hero, only to find him on his doorstep, come to meet his maker. Death dances in a disco. The first story, The Hades Business, was written when Pratchett was 13. It concerns the eruption of the devil into an advertiser's flat. Pratchett is apologetic about it, but it has a gleeful pace and a very satisfactory ending. All his stories have satisfactory endings. I particularly like the one based on a real incident in 1973, when a lorry overturned in Hollywood let out some crates of chickens, who settled in a shrubbed verge. I like the weird one in which desperate travellers are trapped inside the world of Victorian Christmas cards, with snow covered with tiny tinselly shards, monstrous robins, and a dreadful oblong slot. There are tales about computers, including one, written in 1990, which is told by an amiable repairman, not very bright, but good with machines, who works on machines inside which people create their own reality. Again, with a good ending. There is also a collection of stories from the Discworld, including a long and wicked one about Granny Weatherwax, and a hilarious version of the national anthem of Ankh Morpork. And there is a grim little poem about how they don't teach you the facts of death, your mum and dad. They give you pets. Pratchett comments, "I tried to write this as though I was 13 years old, with that earnest brand of serious amateurishness. This is possibly not a long way from how I write at the best of times." I can see what he means, what his teacher understood when he was 13, and what we all, 13-year-olds, nerds and geeks, reading writers and university teachers, recognize with glee, is that he is a born writer, a maker, inimitable.